This week on Trending Globally, we're talking about U.S. trade with China. Ed Steinfeld is a professor of political science and director of both the Watson Institute and the China Initiative at Brown University. Ed, thanks for coming in and talking to us about China and tariffs today.
My pleasure.
First of all, I have just the most basic question. Are we in a trade war yet? Yes or no?
No, we're not in a trade war yet. There have been policies stated but not yet implemented, so we're in talk mode right now rather than war mode.
Mm-hmm. Despite the tariffs going back and forth.
Well, absolutely. Tariff announcements have gone back and forth, but the tariffs haven't been implemented. There are phase-in periods, and so we, again, are in talk mode rather than war mode. And on all sides, I think, we're in either publicly or privately, a mode of lots of articulation of different interests within the countries, let alone across them.
Mm-hmm. And given what you know about both sides, do you think there's a way to avoid this still, to talk ourselves back?
Yes, there are ways to talk ourselves back. It becomes increasingly difficult for either side to back off as the ferocity of the claims or the depth of the claims get deeper and deeper and more serious.
Steinfeld says this wasn't always the case. Many Chinese citizens even supported Trump during the campaign.
Partly because he's entertaining and was viewed as entertaining, I think. But also partly, and I'm speaking about the Chinese media and also many elites that I interact with and some government officials, partly there was a sense that Donald Trump is a business person. And business people, at the end of the day, are practical and they follow their economic interests and they're willing to negotiate. And so I think that faith in Donald Trump as a reliable business person is being challenged by these tariff announcements. Now, one could say, look, Trump is just stating a position and everybody knows that this is just a negotiating position. I think Chinese observers increasingly, they're not sure what this position really represents. And that lack of certainty is causing a great deal of concern in China, as it is in the United States, for that matter.
Mm-hmm. The argument made by Trump and many on the right is that China isn't following the rules and that there's an uneven playing field. Steinfeld says it's not so simple.
I was going to say there are claims on both sides of non-level playing field. There are more than two sides to this. There are many different stakeholders and there are many different assertions about lack of fairness.
For instance, a lot of the technology used in China was designed in the U.S., and this is a cause of concern for many Chinese businesses.
And there's concern partly because of concerns about dependence economically, but there are also security concerns. When the Snowden accusations became public in primarily in early 2013, I think many Chinese elites, many Chinese observers, and Chinese government officials recognize that so much core technology in China, so much infrastructural technology has been provided from abroad, and the possibility that that technology has windows for overseas intelligence gathering, particularly American intelligence gathering, is of great concern. So the accusations of intellectual theft, the accusations about espionage, the accusations of aspirations to make China great again, as well as make America great again, are bandied back and forth in a way that I don't think is particularly unique historically, but in a way that doesn't lead to obvious conclusions that one side is somehow walking all over the other.
Meanwhile, the U.S. is arguing that China is stealing American intellectual property. But this question, too, is more complicated than it appears.
It's for sure true that there have been instances of technologies of intellectual property that have been stolen in the commercial environment. That is I don't justify that, but empirically, that's a completely normal phenomenon for any country playing catch up. It's routine that the commercial players in those countries steal technology, or they mimic technology, or they reverse engineer technology. And if you're not sure about it, look at the United States. It's been true in U.S. industrial development history. It's been true in Japanese history, South Korean history. And so, of course, it's true in Chinese history. In some cases, these are state-led efforts to steal or reverse engineer technology. In some cases, they're just commercial efforts.
Rather than committing out-and-out IP theft, Chinese companies are often taking foreign technology and doing something new with it.
And in China, we see that kind of innovation. We see innovation in design to lower cost. We see innovation in terms of new applications of technologies. And we see IP theft. And those are all happening in a single environment. Hmm. In many cases, it's simply those companies acting as customers, the latest customers for capital equipment provided commercially by sellers in countries like the US or Germany. That's a normal set of commercial transactions. And we as observers or policymakers or readers of the media have to be able to distinguish between those normal transactions that have been going on long before China became a rising economic power and transactions that we would view appropriately as illegal or inappropriate.
But the political discourse in both the United States and China doesn't take these nuances into account.
It's hard for many people on all sides of this dispute to make these distinctions. There's, of course, politics involved, but there's also very complex issues of commercial transactions, many of which are not public, many of which are not well understood by regulators, and many of which involve players, companies that are not terribly eager to advertise mm-hmm. exactly what they're doing, partly because they want to protect their IP, partly because their business strategies themselves have IP embedded in them.
And some Western countries, according to Steinfeld, take a different approach. Germany and Switzerland are eager to work with China because having their technology used by Chinese companies is hugely profitable.
So that's simply to say that in the American political discourse, the issue has been China stealing, and there is some stealing going on. In the German, in the European discourse, the issue has been much more how to collaborate with Chinese counterparts in a commercially valuable way from the perspective of a German or a Swiss company. There is great desire to be embedded in all of this 21st century industrial growth that's happening in China, and happening in China faster and in a more technologically sophisticated fashion than in many other parts of the world.
Trump's shifting views on the Trans-Pacific Partnership have created a lot of uncertainty about the future of trade in East Asia. He campaigned against the TPP and withdrew the United States from the agreement 3 days after his inauguration. But in April, he reversed his position. Steinfeld says that focusing on Trump's flip-flop misses the bigger picture, which is that the decision is not in his hands.
The issue in part is Congress. And whether it was the Obama administration or the Trump administration, Congress then and now doesn't seem terribly inclined to accept TPP. And in fact, neither candidate in 2016 was advocating for TPP. I think there are some good reasons for being hesitant about TPP, interestingly, and some not so good reasons. Interestingly, on the left and the right in the United States, there's been pushback against TPP. I think it's, of course, possible for the U.S. to rejoin, or at least to rejoin some kind of negotiated reentry, but I think it's highly unlikely.
Even if the United States does rejoin the TPP, Steinfeld says, he's still skeptical about the agreement.
TPP has a fundamental problem, and the fundamental problem is not that the U.S. isn't in it, although that is a big problem. The other fundamental problem is China's not in it. And to think about some kind of trade and commercial partnership in East Asia without the largest economy in that region, I think is very problematic.
But wasn't that the point?
Well, I happen to think the point itself, if that's the point.
That's a bad point.
That if the point is to exclude China, that's not a viable path to the future. If the point is to build something that then will accommodate another entrant, China, well, that's a little bit different. I think the whole framing of TPP as an alternative to Chinese quote-unquote rules, quote-unquote, was and continues to be a fundamental mistake. The test of any global order, maybe the test, the most important test, is its ability to accommodate rising powers. and accommodate those rising powers peacefully. That's not to say that an existing order has to completely knuckle under to any demands that are made, but the test is, can a rising power be accommodated?
But Steinfeld says all of his predictions could be wrong and something totally unexpected might happen. He's been studying China for years, and he says that the only consistency has been that the country is changing, and it's changing fast.
I guess I could say this about the U.S. too, but we're at a moment, although China's been in this moment now for decades, things change so rapidly, so dramatically. I frequently feel when I'm back in a new environment, or I'm back in an environment that somehow changed in fundamental ways, which is to say, we should always be cautious about what somebody outside China is saying about what's going on inside China. And I would include myself in that with that caution as well.
Well, thank you so much for your very, very, very informed and nuanced insights.
Thank you.
This has been Trending Globally, Politics and Policy. If you enjoyed today's conversation, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, or Stitcher, or download us on your favorite podcasting app. If you like us, rate us, and help others who might enjoy the show find us. For more information, go to watson.brown.edu.